Oh, yes, it is. Rich Shurtleff, Ken Laird, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson. A time of year that I'm sure, Ted, you remember this well, I'm sure. Summer is over. Time to go to work. What was that first day like when you arrived at campus? Like when you arrived at the camp to get ready for what was going to be a very, very long stretch of months? What's day number one like?
Ted showed up in a Batmobile.
I did not. Nothing. I came in not on a wing and a prayer. Well, pretty much a wing and a prayer, but nothing fancy. I came in just nervous as all get out because the first day of camp, Steve Diassi knocked on my door. He said, yeah, Parcells told me to come over and tell you that the incumbent linebacker named Todd Collins did not show up, and so you're going to be starting from day one, and so don't screw it up. And so I went into the bathroom and just threw up everything I ate for breakfast.
Oh, jeez.
And then went out and practiced, you know, and I just remember nerves, ball of nerves, man. I mean, the Patriots were turning a corner. You know, the 94 season, they had a really – you know, Bledsoe kind of had an outbreak season and a lot of high expectations. And so, and Bill Parcells was not an easy coach to play for. So, and then all of a sudden, the guy that I was competing with didn't show up. So there was a lot of pressure on me day one. So, yeah, I think I threw up before every single practice for the first week.
Damn. Oh, my God. Oh, well, yeah. A lot of people are going to be throwing up next week because it is the beginning of camp. And covering the whole thing is going to be our good buddy Tommy Curran from NBC Sports Boston. Tommy Curran, have you ever thrown up on the first day of camp by any chance?
No, and I love that story from Ted.
So
I never caught that after any practices, the vomit on the breath.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's actually a good question you could ask these guys. Like, you know, did you have any strange reaction on your first day out there? I have a feeling that...
there's rookies. You're going to hear... You go into the bathroom before practice in these first few practices. I bet you hear some guys heaving. Oh, yeah. I mean that was commonplace, at least it was when I played. I can't imagine being... I mean, the pressure is, there's a lot of pressure, man. This is your big break, and you don't want to screw it up, man.
Absolutely.
And you were making $200 a day back then,
that
too.
That's correct, yeah. All that jingle.
Well, Tommy Curran, we've been talking a lot about one particular story. We got a lot to talk about with you, obviously, with camp starting. But can we just start with the Gabe Backus situation? You know, I think we heard Burt Breer yesterday say that this could be a red shirt situation. First of all, can you kind of explain what that could mean? And second of all, whose fault is it that this guy doesn't seem like he's going to be playing this season?
I wouldn't go that far at all. It could be a red shirt season in that, and I would imagine Burt meant that there's a lot for him to overcome in terms of the learning curve. But that being said, if he signs tomorrow, and even with that learning curve, he's going to play. They need edge help. It's not like they can just have him sign and say, we have plenty of players, we don't need you out there. It's going to certainly be a learning curve. He's put himself behind the eight ball with this contract strife. My best understanding of what has occurred right now is it's contractual. It's not physical. And we've seen him posting on social media. This is a second-round pick from Illinois, edge player who they had high hopes of having be a contributor in a huge position of need this year. He had a knee procedure done. Now, when the knee procedure was done was after he came to rookie minicamp, he said, well, I think I have a knee thing here, or I have a knee thing. And the Patriots hadn't found that, nor had anybody else, prior to the draft and prior to the rechecks done right around the draft. So the player that they drafted, in essence, was not the one they signed up for because he had a knee issue that didn't occur under the Patriots' watch. We went and had the procedure done, and I think now the issue isn't whether or not he's healthy. It's the simple fact of, okay, well, we drafted you thinking you were in one condition, and you were indeed in another condition. Where do you fit then in terms of the slot? Because
I'm a little confused here. Are you saying that did he injure himself after he was drafted, or was it an injury that they just didn't find when they before they drafted him?
I don't think it was disclosed. But I don't blame you for being confused. I'm glad you asked. Every team does a recheck. All the players are rechecked prior to the draft, and the Patriots went and drafted him. And after drafting him, he came to the OTAs minicamp, said he had a knee issue, and then that was addressed via surgery. If that injury occurred after the recheck, which seems to be the case, the onus would, I think, be on Akis and his agent to let all the teams know, we had an issue. It's not the same player that you saw. It's not the same player that was done a recheck on. So that's my best understanding of where things stand. So basically, they drafted a player that may not have fully disclosed his condition prior. Again, the team hasn't done a very good job of illuminating us on what the situation is, nor has the agent come out and said anything. So this is my best understanding of where things are, and that's what the hang-up is. The hang-up is not that he is injured beyond repair and may not play, but the Patriots still, because he hasn't been in, have still not had a chance to look and say, okay, well, he's going to be fine. So your hang-up is that. I hope I was clear enough in my understanding of the situation. Was that kind of clear?
Yes, yeah, that does make sense, yes.
ATC, okay. Let's go from the Gabe Akers situation and go to the Gonzo. How do you anticipate the Christian Gonzalez contract, lingering kind of thing out there? How do you feel that's going to get resolved, and what does that look like for training camp?
I think it's really contingent on Devin Witherspoon with Seattle. Another player similar to Gonzalez. When his deal is done, then I think the Patriots and Gonzalez in particular will say, okay, now we have a comp that we're going to work off. You can't really work off of Trent McDuffie. He's a slot corner. Christian plays a different position. I would imagine that Gonzalez wants to be closer to 33 to 35. We've heard mentioned upper 30s, even 40. And Albert, again, does a great job. And he wondered aloud, didn't report it, wondered, but would he want to reset the market and be closer in cost to some of the non-corners out there? And I think that's an interesting counter on the part of a player like Gonzalez. We heard a tackle recently, Paris, played for the Cardinals, might be Paris Johnson, I might have the wrong name. He made the point, he's like, look, I play left tackle, I have to stop guys who are making $40 million. Why aren't I not making $40 million? Jackson Smith and Jigba made signed for $42 million as a wide receiver. Christian Gonzalez had a good Super Bowl, very good postseason in general. That could be his counter. But I think Witherspoon is the domino that they're waiting to see fall. And I think that it does make sense for the Patriots to say, okay, you want to do that? We can do that. We'll wait for that to happen. But generally, Teddy, don't you see these things take longer rather than shorter once it gets to this point? Closer to the season sometimes.
Absolutely. I anticipate it getting done, but, a week and a half before the season starts maybe, just at the end of training camp. Yeah.
Same.
So, A.J. Brown, obviously a big story here in the offseason, Tom. How healthy is he, to your knowledge, and like how hard are they going to ride him? Because he does have that knee issue, right, in camp. How much do he and Drake need to work together to get that chemistry up?
That's a great question. It's probably going to be the number one thing that we're all going to try and watch, engage going through. We watched with Stephon Diggs last year. He was coming off an ACL, and he participated pretty strenuously for a guy with that situation, and he was out there a lot. I don't imagine that A.J. Brown is going to be limited in any way. They might manage him because he's a player who's getting closer to 30 at this juncture, but they need the reps in terms of establishing that kind of chemistry that's necessary and the communication that's necessary, because we've seen it for decades. If you're running the Patriots offense and Josh McDaniels is at the controls, you want to be able to do things post-snap so that that's when the wide receiver is reading the corner, reading leverage, making a decision afterwards. So we used to see it, Teddy. Brady would go with whichever his top receivers were and work with a cornerback. I remember one of the coolest things I would watch would be Brady working with Gronkowski against Revis and just standing on a field like watching three of the best players that ever played their positions.
Yeah.
And they would just work for 10, 15 minutes during a practice so that they're getting on the same page. And as Brady once said about Gronkowski, I can watch the way he's running down the field from 25 yards away, and just by the tilt of his shoulders, I know which way he's going to go.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Those things have to be established.
So, you know, it's interesting, too, you know, with A.J. Brown and everything. Is Kayshon Boutte going to be on this team? What do you think is going to happen?
There's not a huge market around the NFL for Kayshon Boutte right now. Otherwise, I think he might have been dealt. And to me, if I were the Patriots, I would look at that situation and say, we're not going to give him away. He's a productive player. He's a good yards per catch guy. He catches the ball in traffic. He doesn't have drops generally. He would be insurance for A.J. Brown. He would be insurance inside. I don't think the Patriots would be in a massive rush to move on from him. But that is, Rich, one of the things that I look at that's going to be really interesting to see develop. You have A.J. Brown. You have Dobbs. You have Boutte. You have Kyle Williams. You have Mac Hollins. You have Efton Chisholm. You have Pop Douglas. That's seven players, all of whom, again, Efton Chisholm's not going to be screaming if they throw the ball to A.J. Brown, but who could use the football and do some work with it. So divvying up those reps, especially for Dobbs, I think, is going to be interesting to see how frequently he gets the ball, because he was signed as a player that prior to A.J. Brown getting here, you said, okay, well, that's where Diggs' targets are going to go. If A.J. Brown's 150, 160 target a year guy, which I think he could be, how many is Dobbs getting? So that's an interesting thing I want to see unfold as well.
Hey, Tom, what do you think about the changes made on offensive line? It's subtle. I mean, you're running Vera Tucker to play guard. You moved Jared Wilson from guard to center. How do you think that offensive line, if they all stay healthy and as it's currently constructed, how do you think that has been assembled? Do you like the changes they made in the on that line? Yeah.
I think they can kick the hell out of people if Elijah Vera Tucker stays healthy. You know, you had an issue last year with Will Campbell and Jared Wilson really playing pretty well as rookies next to each other. But then as the season wore along and when defenses got more difficult, and the Patriots are going to see a hell of a lot more top 10 defenses this year than they did last year, I think those two guys next to each other were exploited because of their youth and with Campbell's injury that he played with during the playoffs. Now you're going to stick a guy in between them in Vera Tucker, who's got experience, who's an unbelievably talented player. He's just been snake bit by injury. If they can get Wilson in a more natural position, he should be better than Bradbury, who was good at center last year. I think that Campbell is going to be, I think he's a starter level player at the very least, and I think he could be a very good starter at left tackle. So you have that side is locked down. Mike Mwenu should be fine, and I think that from what I've seen, and it'll be fun to watch this too, Caleb Lomu backing up Morgan Moses, the first-round pick. Lomu, I like the way he moved. I thought he certainly fits the suit.
Boy,
so
he looks good.
I mean,
he looks the part, doesn't he? I mean, he's just huge.
He does. He's huge.
Yeah.
So, Tommy, I want to quickly jump back to something Ted was talking about. Like, how much influence does Mike Vrabel have on the roster? Like, this whole Christian Gonzalez situation, do you think that he's got any kind of say or influence on the crafts as to whether or not they end up giving him that extension or they look elsewhere?
It's funny you said crafts. I was talking to Phil Perry earlier today just about this. And, you know, he mentioned how I think a lot of people are under the perception that it's the crafts. I cannot imagine that Jonathan or Robert are sitting across the table from the agent or on the phone with them talking about what the numbers are. That's something that you've asked, you know, Ryan Cowden and Elliot Wolf to take care of, and they have a budget to work with. And I would imagine Mike's just kind of walking in and saying, what's the status? That should be the way it goes. There's a budget there. Everyone should know that this player is going to make between 32 and 36 million. How you divvy it up and how you give them the, you know, the bonus, how much guaranteed money is up to them. I think in Vrabel's, at least the way that he has portrayed it, in the way that he has spoken to us, is that's them, that's their job, just keep me posted on it. So I just don't think that – I think the pecking order works, Rich, mm-hmm. in other words. Instead of Mike just, you know, knock, 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 can we just get him in camp? I don't care what it costs. I just don't think that would happen.
Did you read anything into those comments that Robert Kraft said about Mike Vrabel at the Fanatics Fest when he went, I think it was like, sweetheart, I know he'll be our coach for years to come. Like, he was, like, really emphatic on letting you know that they are all in on Mike Vrabel. Did you buy that? Did you get the same sense?
Yes, I do. I buy it. I do buy it. I think he's done the job long enough. Kraft, I mean, has been an owner long enough. He's seen every manner and stripe of human failing and misstep. And generally speaking, in my experience with him, he's got a pretty good heart. And if you look him in the eye and say, I effed up, I'm sorry, I need to work on some things, I'm going to be a better person, he's going to say, look, okay, well, I wish that hadn't happened. I wish you well. Please go do the job well. I truly believe that would be the case. Ted?
Agreed. 100%. Yep.
It doesn't seem to be affecting Vrabel. Like, we heard this, the speech that he made to some of the rookies. Like, he seems like the same Mike Vrabel, well, right?
But when you get the owner to back you like that, and he feel you get the support he got from Robert Kraft, I mean, I think it allows him to be freed up and get back to, you know, being the, you know, the guy he was before all that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that you're – unfortunately, we all wear masks wherever we are.
Mm-hmm.
Home masks, your work masks, your coach masks, your talking to the fellow coaches mask. And I think Mike is adept. Again, I'm going to defer to Ted because I love having the opportunity to talk to Ted about somebody that he knows more intimately than I do. But I think Mike isn't artificial or inauthentic, but I do think that he is able to – code switch, if you will, pretty quickly. And if he's talking to a bunch of 22-year-olds who just got drafted, he's not going to be sitting there going, oh, no, what do they think of me?
Right.
He's got a job to do.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, happy football season, man. This is nice.
I know.
Finally, we can stop speculating about, well, I guess we still have the Diana Rossini thing that has not yet been settled, but outside of that, everything else seems to be kind of falling into place. The Gonzalez thing is going to be wild, wild to see what they end up doing with that, whether he plays, whether he doesn't play. I mean, listen, the drama never stops. The NFL is honestly 12 months out of the year, but this is where it gets good, Tommy Curran. This is where it gets good.
And you know what? By the time I talk to you next week, they're going to go at it for the next 5 days, but it's kind of a ramp-up period. Wednesday, I think, is off, and then Thursday should be kind of a legitimate practice. So by the time I talk to you next Thursday afternoon, should have some little paint swapping down low, maybe some goal line activity I can tell you about.
Hell yeah, Tommy. All right, Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boss, thanks for coming out.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Take care, guys.
Real quick, I just do want to, I want to say one thing. ESPN could take note of something that just happened there. Ryan Clark got in trouble and got fired, and the justification seems to be because he said to Pete Schrager, who is very good, I like Pete Schrager, he said, you know, your opinion is this, but it's the non-player in you that thinks that. As a player, I think this. Did you hear Tommy Curran saying to Ted, that's why I like talking to you, because you've played the game and you give insight?
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Curran is the most connected, most respected reporter out there covering the Patriots. No one doubts his knowledge of the game, his cred. But even right there, he asked Ted, but there's certain aspects I'll never get because you played it.
Mm-hmm.
And ESPN seems to think that's a bad thing, and where they should be embracing that.
Well, McAfee played. He was a punter, you know, so he's important. Punters are important too, right?
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go. All right, 617-779-7937. We'll be back in two.